court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Welcome to Court Appointed, Two Dudes' Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, Tommy, this topic is called civil forfeiture.
Civil forfeiture. I have no idea what that is. The only thing I know anything about that is forfeit. I know about forfeit.
That's what you did a lot when you played sports?
Yeah, well, you the other guy, whenever you were playing sports in the neighborhood or something like that, and one of the other kids, man, I got to go home and eat dinner. Ah, he quit. You forfeit. We win. He quit. You forfeit. We win.
Suck it, loser.
That's right. Losers walk.
Civil forfeiture as the topic was suggested by Brad Hall on our court-appointed Facebook page.
Brad Hall, he used to be on SNL.
Was he?
Yeah. And I think he's married to, what's her name, Louise Dreyfus.
Mary Louise Dreyfus?
Not Mary. Elaine from...
Isn't her name Mary? Julia.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Yeah, there you go. There is a Mary or whatever, but it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus or however you say it. Yeah, Brad Hall is who she, they were both on SNL together and got married.
Well, I didn't know we had such a famous person to listen to our podcast.
Well, thank you, Brad. Maybe you should submit some things, some writings, some scripts for us that we could use just like on Saturday Night Live.
That's such a strange name too, Brad Hall. Like there's probably only one of those, right?
What do you mean Brad Hall? It's like John Smith or... John Doe or something, not to infer that he's a dead guy we don't know.
Well, I mean, I may have been.
He's evidently a live guy that we do.
I maybe was doing a little bit of a bit there. He just didn't.
Oh.
It's really.
I played into it. I went along with you.
Oh, wow.
I knew what you were saying. I was taking the other road.
Well, I see you're drinking some beer here, and I'm really thinking about making you civilly forfeit one of those beers to me.
But I brought extras so you could have one, and it was bourbon last week, but I'm back on the beer today.
I know. Well, I gave up drinking for Lent, except one day a week, and
this sucker.
This is not the day.
The religion did you in.
Every time.
Only the good die young. You ever heard that?
I have.
Billy Joel will tell you.
Well, I think I'm probably safe for a good long time then.
Yeah, me too.
Well, part of the reason why Brad suggested this topic was because these case names are very strange names in general. Some of the ones that he put on the court-appointed Facebook page, United States v. $124,700 in U.S. currency, United States versus approximately 64,695 pounds of shark fins.
Shark fins?
Shark fins.
Fins to the left, fins to the right.
United
You're
States.
The only game in town.
United States versus 40 barrels and 20 kegs of Coca-Cola. United States versus one book called Ulysses.
One book called Ulysses.
United States versus 2,507 live canary-winged parakeets. Nebraska v. 1 1972 door sedan Rambler, parentheses Gremlin.
And what was that Land Snatch 7?
Yeah,
order zero or whatever.
South Dakota v. 15 impounded cats.
So impounded cats.
Yeah,
so you can have them.
There's a very good reason why these case names are so strange, and I'm going to get into that a little bit when I talk about the nature of these cases. But civil forfeiture's come under a lot of heat recently, and it's because it's been expanded quite a bit. John Oliver did a spot on Last Week Tonight in 2014 about it. I don't know if you've ever watched that show.
Nope, never have.
It was pretty funny, about a 15-minute spot on it.
Who's John Oliver?
John Oliver, he's a comedian. He was on The Daily Show. Mm. Now he has his own show on HBO called Last Week Tonight. Talks about a lot of political and news things.
I have not seen that. I'll have to put that one on DVR.
Oh, it's really good. He's really funny. He's English, so he has an English accent, so that always...
That makes him superior to the rest of us.
Pretty much, yeah.
He'll sound smarter anyway.
Yeah, he dresses very smart, too. Very smart dresser.
Very smart dresser, huh?
Yes. So
I need some snappy dressing guidelines.
But most recently, actually, a Supreme Court opinion came out on March 6, 2017... The style of that case was Lisa Olivia Leonard v. Texas, and it was actually authored by Justice Clarence Thomas.
And this girl versus the entire state of Texas?
It sounds like it. So basically with this opinion that came out by Justice Clarence Thomas, it was not actually a real Supreme Court opinion. Basically, it was just an opinion where...
Is it a fake one? Is it like the fake news that Trump keeps telling us about?
Alternative facts.
Is this on CNN and MSNBC, so you know it's fake?
This was basically a order, which was denying the petition for writ of certiorari. So basically, that means that the Supreme Court said, we're not going to hear your appeal. But then Justice Thomas went on for about six different pages about the civil forfeiture issue. And essentially what he did was he outlined a blueprint about why the earlier court decisions that kind of established the civil forfeiture process don't really jive with the current practice as it's in place today. The case was ultimately denied because the due process argument that Ms. Leonard was putting forward was only raised for the first time in that appeal to the Supreme Court. She didn't basically argue that due process issue at the lower level. And only in certain circumstances are you allowed to raise issues on the first time before the Supreme Court, and this was not one of them. So basically, that's because of theories of estoppel and waiver, which we've discussed before.
Yes, we have discussed estoppel.
So that's the old use it or lose it.
Use it or lose it.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you get older.
Yeah?
Yeah. You either use it or you lose it.
Sometimes you just lose it even if you don't use it.
Yeah, that's
right. Or if you use it. Or something. I don't know. Viagra. Anyway, so...
Viagra, was that? It sounded like one of those...
Subliminal message.
Yeah, Viagra. Viagra.
It's one of our new advertisers.
I wish.
Yeah, just expect their advertisements to pop up everywhere.
Yeah, we'd be up all night.
So, but essentially...
All right, now give me some details on this case. You got to give me some details. I'm confused. I don't understand. We went to the Supreme Court, so obviously it went through some lower courts. What was she trying to get or not lose or forfeit the game and lose or something? What was happening here?
Well... according to the syllabus of the court, basically early in the morning of April 1st, 2013, a police officer stopped James Leonard for a traffic infraction along with a known drug corridor.
A known drug corridor.
Well, because some interstates get a lot of drug activity.
Well, that's true. US 23 between here and Columbus is a known drug corridor.
So they see a lot more incidents where drugs are found in cars and things like that.
And if the license plate is from Michigan, you better believe that's what's going on.
We have a lot of Michigan drug dealers here in Huntington.
Yes, that's not universal. That's just here.
Yeah. So during a search of the vehicle, the officer found a safe in the trunk. And Leonard said that Leonard's passenger, Nikosa Kane, and they gave conflicting stories about the contents of the safe. Leonard at one point said that it belonged to his mother, and that's the person who's the petitioner in this case. And then the officer basically obtained a search warrant and discovered that the safe contained $201,000. And a bill of sale for a Pennsylvania home.
Well, that sounds legal.
Right. I mean, it's not against the law to have that much money.
It's odd to have it in your trunk, but, right. You know, maybe it's like they're where they live. It's their mobile home.
So essentially, the state initiated the civil forfeiture proceedings against the $201,000, basically saying that it was related to criminal activity. Namely, they were saying it was related to the sale of narcotics.
But did they catch him with narcotics, too?
Nope.
They just, because they were on a drug corridor, they assumed that it had to be narcotics?
Exactly.
I can't come down on that side of the government on that one. What I'm hearing so far, I'm for the mother.
So essentially what it said is they basically cited the suspicious circumstances of the stop and the contradictory stories provided and the fact that the government had shown through a preponderance of evidence that the money was either the proceeds of a drug sale or intended to be used in such a sale. So basically, that was what it was that came down. They said that, you know what? We think it was right that we took it. The state proved it beyond a preponderance of the evidence. Hmm. So I'm going to get into more about the different levels of scrutiny, but this is just...
Yeah, that sounds a little fishy to me, though. I mean, maybe they're right, but there's two different things in court. One is you may be right, but the other is you got to prove it.
Yeah.
You can't just, you know, this makes sense. Sure, it makes sense, but you still got to prove it.
Right. Well, essentially, these cases like this, the burden almost shifts to the person whose possession it is to show that it's not related. So it's... You know,
That's a shame, because usually it's the other way around.
Right.
Usually the preponderance of evidence means that the prosecution has to demonstrate that this is probably so, as opposed to the person on trial demonstrating that it's probably not.
Yeah, and essentially, that's the whole problem, as Justice Thomas talks about with the civil forfeiture thing, is that basically you're having... things that are supposed to be tied to criminal matters that are being tried civilly and under a lower standard. So that's the whole you know, real issue.
Now, is he talking about, when he says that, just this particular case, or is he talking about civil forfeitures in general?
No, he's talking about it in general.
He's saying that he thinks that law itself has some type of defect in it.
Pretty much, and not just that one individual law, but the whole theory of civil forfeiture itself, is there's something wrong with it.
Well, that's a whole new world right there.
Yeah, so basically, this is just one case that came up, and he said, and I'm going to get into more about what he said, but at the very end of his opinion, he states...
That was a Little Mermaid reference.
Oh, I'm sorry. What did you say?
A whole new world.
A whole new world.
Every 12-year-old and under girl in the country knows that song.
That's true.
So if there's any 12-year-old girls listening to our show, sing along. Now is the time.
And we hope our show has helped you win bar trivia.
Now for the interlude, you can sing along. Da, 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 da.
So just to give you some stats about civil forfeiture, this is from an article in the Washington Post. Basically said that since 9/11, without search warrants or indictments through a equitable sharing program, or through the equitable sharing program, which was a post 9/11 thing, there have been 62,000 cash seizures made on highways and elsewhere, and resulting in more than $2.5 billion, which has been seized. Now these are assets which were taken without search warrants or indictments.
That ain't chump change.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, that would fix our budget shortfall in the state.
No kidding. And they do them here. West Virginia does have a civil forfeiture.
And it's not just cash.
Well, the thing is that money...
It's property too, right?
Yeah, but it goes directly to the police. It doesn't go anywhere else.
Right.
And it's completely their discretion what they want
to
do.
And in some cases, doesn't it go to the attorney general of the state or something like that?
I don't believe so. It just goes directly to the police.
Oh, I was thinking the attorney general distributed. I guess that's in lawsuits that they file against things like the drug
Correct.
Thing
yeah,
that
it's
they
different.
Had.
So there's a couple things just for to keep in mind about civil forfeiture. First, civil forfeiture takes place in a civil court and not a criminal court. So we've discussed that issue before in one of our previous episodes, and that was civil v. criminal. And that episode goes in depth of differences about civil court versus criminal court. So if you want to more in-depth detail about that, maybe go listen to that episode. So, but the most important differences in this aspect between the civil and the criminal is, first, is that in a criminal case, the standard of proof is going to be beyond a reasonable doubt, which is a pretty high standard. Also, in criminal cases, you're guaranteed an attorney to represent you. That's under the Sixth Amendment to the Constitution. So those are two protections you have, basically, under criminal courts that you're not going to have in civil cases.
Wow.
The civil cases, the standard proof is much lower. You're not entitled to an attorney. That basically means that people have to represent themselves, or actually hire an attorney to represent them if the police take their money like this.
So let me get this straight. So these people that were in this car, they get stopped. They're not getting charged with a crime, so they're not facing jail time. They're just seizing their money that they find in the trunk because they feel that it's probably has something to do with drugs. So all this case is about is taking their money and not even prosecuting them of committing some crime?
Exactly.
Man,
that's what it is.
Seems sketchy.
It's super controversial. Now, the way these civil forfeiture cases basically take place is the police believe they have a preponderance of evidence that your property was or could be used in a crime, then they basically just seize it, and they take it into custody.
Well, heck, there's a lot of things like that. You ever seen 48 Hours with Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte?
Yes.
Remember that when he goes up, when Eddie Murphy walks up to that guy in the bar and takes his money from him, and he goes, "Give me that, that's mine." He goes, "Where'd you get it?" And he goes, "They paid me that for my job." He goes, "You're too stupid to have a job." He kept his money. That's kind of like that. We're just telling these people, "You're too stupid to have this money. We want it."
A little bit. So after the police take it, they file civil action, and it's not you personally that's on trial in this instance, not the person whose property it is, but it's the belongings yourself. And that's why these cases have these strange names sometimes, is because it's not about you, it's about the property.
The property.
So essentially, when a state files a criminal charge against someone in a criminal action, they're asserting what's called in personam jurisdiction. Basically, they're asserting jurisdiction over that person. In these civil forfeiture cases, the jurisdiction is in rem, basically meaning the jurisdiction is over the thing or the property. In rem means thing or property.
In rem?
In rem.
Is that like rem sleep?
Like REM, like the band?
The band?
Yeah. So
I'm losing my religion.
I'm about to lose my religion and have one of these beers here in a second.
Well, have at it. I'm the devil. I'm tempting you with it.
I'm walking through the desert right now.
That's right. Here, have a beer, my son. Open your throat and taste the cool delectiveness coming down. That's not even a word. I don't know what I came up with.
Delectfulness.
Delectableness.
I knew what you meant.
Delectiveness. What is that?
So the reason that these cases are civil forfeiture cases, and it comes down to basically some historical reasons, as you might have imagined.
From England. They used to grab your stuff in England all the time, and now we decided to do that too, right?
Well, in my very next note, it comes from English law.
I knew it. By order of the king, I am seizing your property and taking it to him. You are not smart enough to have this.
You shall not hunt in the king's forest. So, in
the
England,
knights that say knee.
In England,
knee.
There was a statutory forfeiture of offending subjects to use in violation of the customs and revenue laws. So basically, this was for things being imported into the country, essentially, is what it boiled down to. And so basically, the same practice was started around the time of the founding of our country, when the first Congress passed some laws subjecting ships and cargoes involved in custom offenses to forfeiture. There are also some other laws regarding the same forfeiture for pirate ships.
All right, so when we say, all right, not counting pirate ships, mm-hmm. but we're saying the other ones are like they're trying to bring their goods into the country without paying customs taxes or whatever on them. So at that point, they seize them.
Right. Like they're trying to bring in 2,507 live canary-winged parakeets.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Well, maybe they didn't have the right paperwork for it. They didn't have the parakeets properly tested, and they were going to bring in some sort of crazy parakeet spread disease.
Well, you know what they had to do? That many parakeets would have overloaded the ship. So they had to hire a guy with a big stick to stay down in the hold and beat the side of the hold so they could keep so many in the air at a time to keep from the ship being overloaded.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
But then if they all land, I actually heard there were two because they had to keep them in the air because if they all like went from one side to the other, they could have tipped the ship over if they
landed. Yeah, so you got to keep so many in the air at a time because otherwise the ship was overloaded.
That makes perfect sense.
That's an old railroad story.
I think I've heard that somewhere else before. Is there an actual story to it or just like a...
It's the same type thing.
Oh, okay.
The guy was talking about a railroad car, same thing. Would have been overloaded, but we had to keep a guy in there with a stick to keep so many in the air so it wouldn't be. You had to be there.
like Jimmy Buffett said.
That's right.
These early laws, they basically proceeded under the theory that the thing or the rim was guilty of the crime and not the person itself. And historically, the civil forfeiture was limited to basically to these customs and piracy issues. And proceeding in rem, or just over the property itself, on these kind of matters, was actually a matter of necessity because the parties who were actually responsible for the crime a lot of times were located overseas and beyond the personal in personam jurisdiction of the court. So really, these items would be here on U.S. soil. There's no person really to sue over it. So essentially, you sue the property. And that's how you would grab it under forfeiture.
So like the people maybe manning the ship, they were just hired to bring the stuff over there. So that stuff may not have really even been their property.
Yeah.
So if you prosecuted them, you're prosecuting the wrong people. They had nothing to do with it. They were just contracted to float the ship over there, right?
And that boils down to the whole in personam versus in rem.
I don't know good ship terms there. If they just contracted to float the ship over, I don't know, to drive it. I don't know. What do you do? I'm not nautical at all.
Pilot it?
Pilot it?
Yeah.
I thought that was an airplane.
Well, there's riverboat pilots.
There's riverboat gamblers too.
That's right. I think riverboat pilots are on tugboats. I think
that could be. I've never even been on a cruise, so I don't know.
So the original laws were actually really narrow. They only allowed seizure of the instrumentality of the crime, like the pirate ship or some other kind of booty. But
seize the booty.
not exactly. They didn't allow something that was purchased with the money from the sale of the illegal goods.
If you called that, then would that be a booty call?
Maybe.
That booty is ours. He called it. That's a booty call. That's like dibs, right?
Kind of.
I got dibs on the booty.
It's like a double meaning for booty call I never really thought about.
Yeah, there you go. Learn something new every day, don't you, counselor?
That's right. So as I started to say, that it was more narrow. So basically, only the instrumentality that was used in the crime or the alleged crime was what was allowed to be seized. Whereas now, these kinds of laws are used for different things which were maybe bought with the proceeds of some sort of illegal activity. Like, for example, a drug dealer, somebody who's a known drug dealer, and he buys
37 flat screen TVs.
Yeah, or a mansion or something like that. Even though he's not actually selling drugs out of that mansion, they're going to try to seize it because they're just going to say, well, he bought that with the sale of for some sort of crime. So
you ought to have to prove that, though. You shouldn't just have to suspicion it.
Well, they do have to prove it, but they prove it under this much lower standard. In a lot of states, it's just the preponderance of the evidence. And so preponderance of evidence standard is basically if it's more likely than more likely to be true than not true. And that's what that standard is. So it's super, super low.
Yeah, that's pretty flimsy.
Yeah. So, I mean, really, to have these civil forfeiture proceedings turning on that or even some other different clear and convincing evidence or things like that are just not to that same level of criminal beyond a reasonable doubt, which we would like to see, I think. Because, I mean, I don't have a problem with taking somebody's things if it's proven beyond a reasonable doubt that they're a criminal and they use this in some sort of criminal enterprise. But just basically, it's more likely to be true than not true that was, you know, something is, I just don't like that.
No, that seems sketchy.
One of the theories that Justice Thomas points out in this opinion is that the modern forfeiture law is meant to punish the owner of the property that has been used for the criminal purpose. So basically, whenever the state wishes to punish one of its citizens, it must do so in personam and must allow the person full criminal protections, that higher standard, the beyond reasonable doubt, and appointment of counsel. So his whole theory was if you're punishing the criminal, it's very similar to the state laws, which are, you know, to incarcerate somebody or things like that. So it should be basically proceed along with the same criminal level and have the same protections that you do under the Sixth Amendment.
Well, I would agree with him.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt the current system's led to tons and tons of abuse. There's very little judicial oversight to it.
Well, I mean, probably in this case, I mean, I'm just guessing, but there's a certain amount or element to it that reeks of profiling.
Oh, no doubt.
I mean, if you're saying this is a known drug route, you catch somebody. Now, if he had a bale of dope in the back of his car, or a bag full of meth or whatever meth goes in. I don't know. I don't do that. But
a bag of meth?
Whatever it is.
You haven't watched Breaking Bad yet either, have you?
No, I haven't watched that either. But I mean, if you had that and you had that money, okay, I'm going to say, yeah, you're probably got ill-gotten goods.
Yeah.
But you just found him with the money and yeah, maybe you put two and two together. You think that. But you should have to prove it. This is America. We have a higher standard. We protect the criminals more than we protect the victims. And I don't see that happening here.
No, I totally agree. And actually, it's pretty well documented that basically this practice, the civil forfeiture practice, targets the poor and the uneducated because they generally can't afford to hire a lawyer to help them. You know, oftentimes people that are in that same kind of economic class, they don't have credit. So they pay for a lot of things with cash. So they might have more cash on them because they don't use credit. They don't have credit cards.
They don't trust banks.
Yeah. And they don't have credit to begin with. Yeah. So,
well, and there's a lot of laws at banks that crack down on cash usage.
Yeah.
It's almost becoming, cash is almost becoming outdated.
Yeah.
I've heard them talking the other day and that, you know, it costs more than a penny to make a penny.
I don't doubt it. Pennies are, I used a penny today though.
But
it was 6 cents was the change.
That's true, but should we keep making something that you would walk by on the street and not even pick up?
I only pick it up if it's heads. If it's tails, I stay away from that thing, man. It's bad luck.
You're all for heads?
Oh, yeah.
The heads have it.
The heads have it. This whole civil forfeiture thing has also been called policing for profit. That's one of the
alliteration
type turns.
Yeah, that's exactly one of my other thoughts, because you get in this day and age, you have so many city governments and county governments and state governments that are not being able to meet their budgets, all the infrastructure problems, you know, here in town. They had to meet the city budget, they had to lay off policemen and firemen to be able to do it. And you've got this outcry about them being laid off. Here's an easy target. Go out and find people with money and cook up a case to take their money and help fill in your budget shortfalls.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think that's tempting people to do something that they really shouldn't do.
Or it encourages police departments to purchase things they don't really need.
Yeah.
Like, you know, tanks or I don't know. things like that.
Or they're driving around in Dodge Chargers and stuff like that that they seized in some of these things. You know, that, well, we need a new police car. City council wouldn't approve the purchase of one. So let's go grab that guy's car. He's probably a drug dealer. Let him try to prove that he's not.
In 2015, there was a study by the Institute for Justice, and they're a libertarian public interest law firm, and they outlined the enormous financial incentives for the police to seize the property. So, I mean, it basically, and this money does not go to the city. It goes essentially just to the police departments themselves. And like I said, there's virtually no oversight for it. It's just their money that comes to them. One example that I saw was in Philadelphia. Authorities took in more than $64 million from 2002 to 2012. The Philadelphia DA used $25 million of that to pay for the salaries of the prosecutors who brought those actions. So essentially, almost half of the money they brought in just went to pay their salaries for doing this kind of work. Mm. I mean, it's just crazy.
Well, I don't know. That's somewhere there's got to be something. It's like action here recently was dropped where they were trying to cut budgets in the prosecuting attorney's office. And the prosecuting attorney filed something against the county commission, and it was costing the county commission more than to defend themselves than what they were saving in cutting the prosecutor's budget. So they just said, let's just let it drop.
Yeah.
And that kind of sounds like the same thing.
Yeah, sometimes you have to look at some sort of cost analysis for these type of things. The last sentence of that opinion I really liked, though, it said, whether this court's treatment of the broad modern forfeiture practice can be justified by the narrow historical one is certainly worthy of consideration in greater detail. So Justice Thomas is basically, he outlined why he thinks it's not allowed and laid out a blueprint to say, if you want to challenge this and get to the Supreme Court, say this stuff and I will rubber stamp it myself. So,
well, I mean, I can understand when you catch people in the act of crimes and they have houses, cars, money that was obviously through the drugs you caught them with or in the act of selling. You had informants that went in and bought from them,
yeah.
You know, things like that. That to me is okay. I mean, that's where it should be going. When you have ones that you're just strictly just getting their stuff and you're not proving a criminal case against them, I don't know. Sounds sketchy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, I think civil forfeiture has a good use. You know, I think taking away the instrumentalities that are used in the commission of a crime, like you said, like a drug dealer's car, that's legitimate. I still think even in that circumstance, it needs to be held to that higher standard, and the people need to be afforded those higher protections under the Sixth Amendment. It should have to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt, in my mind.
I think we should start a petition.
Yeah. Well, I mean, who's the lobbyist for people with their money has been seized under this? They don't have a very big lobby, do they?
Probably Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, Snoop Dogg.
He says, hey, the fizzle on the snizzle is not very bajizzle.
The cops stole my stashle, or I'm not even going to go there.
Did you say your stash hole?
Yeah. So many states, and West Virginia is actually included in that, is just this preponderance of an evidence standard for these civil forfeiture cases. So like I said, that standard's met if it's more likely than not true that it was used in some sort of crime. So,
you know what I'd be interested in? A statistic that shows which states use that the most. Because you don't hear about that much unless they, I mean, I'm sure they'd put it in the paper or something, but I see very little about that. But I'd say that it's a common practice in some areas, and that's what's brought it to somebody like Clarence Thomas's attention.
Oh, it happens a lot. There's no doubt. It happens all the time. I mean, I know it happens here in Cabell County quite a bit, too.
But I bet you it's more predominant in some areas than others.
Probably. But the thing is, too, is that these people who get their stuff taken, they don't usually have enough money to hire an attorney to fight it.
Right.
So, I mean, it's if a tree falls in the woods, does it make a sound?
Well, here's the other thing. They come after you and they're going to take your money. Okay, you raise too big of a fuss. Guess what happens next? They connect you to some kind of crime and you're going to jail. So maybe you're kind of vulnerable because if they dig too deep, you're going to go to jail. So you just let it go because it's better for them to take your money than put your butt in jail.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, maybe, okay, that means you were guilty, but I don't know. I still think it's a slippery slope.
Yep. Higher standard. That's what we need. We need the beyond a reasonable doubt standard for these civil forfeiture cases, or just, you know, let them run straight along with the criminal case. prove your criminal case, then take the person's things.
Yeah.
Don't just take it and then...
Don't just take their stuff.
Yeah, the one stat I talked about, those were people that had all that taken, but basically there was no charges even filed in those cases.
It's no different than being a bully, is it?
No, not
I mean,
really.
A bully comes along, takes your lunch money because they can. It's not because you don't deserve your lunch money. It's because they're bullies.
Yeah, kind of the same deal.
We all deserve lunch.
That's right.
Sometimes that's my motto. That's what'd be at the top of the petition.
Sometimes
we all deserve lunch.
You need second breakfast too.
Well, I don't know about that. That adds to the West Virginia obesity problem. I can't second that.
I love breakfast.
I love breakfast too, but one's enough.
Well, that's going to bring us to Legal Briefs is the part of the show where we go over some of the different legal terms that we've discussed. Sometimes Tommy will ask me questions about things, usually things we haven't even talked about or they're really off the wall. Usually it comes in the form of me asking Tommy questions about different terms that I've fully explained and gone over in detail.
I'm sneaky like that.
So the first term is preponderance of evidence.
Preponderance of evidence means that you have to have a boatload of evidence. You got to have more than 50%. At least 51% would be a preponderance of evidence.
More likely to be true than not true. So that would be, yes, 51%.
There you go.
The lowest standard.
It's a low standard of need.
Let's ask this question differently. What's the highest standard?
The highest standard is beyond a reasonable doubt.
And what does that mean?
That means that nothing else could be possible. This is the only answer for this. Like in a murder trial, you have to convict them beyond a reasonable doubt.
It's basically the trier of fact has no doubt as to the guilt, or the doubts are only unreasonable.
Because you brought evidence that showed it, DNA and, you know, fingerprints and things like that. So it proves that you were there and that you did it, that you were in the room where it happened,
Estoppel.
Estoppel. Let's see. That was a news reporter on NBC, John Estoppel, and he used to do those investigative reports. And then he got some kind of disease, and now he can't do it anymore. It's a sad story.
Estoppel is the prince. What was his name? I can't remember.
John Stossel.
Oh, Stossel. What is his real name?
Three on that one.
Yeah. Huh? Estoppel is the principal.
Sometimes you just got to grab and go and just hope for the best.
Estoppel is the principle that precludes a person from asserting something that is contrary to what is implied by a previous action or statement.
Oh, we did that in another one.
We did, yeah.
That's like once you've said this, you can't turn around and say now it's not true once you've said it under oath.
Right, and then waiver.
Yeah.
And that means a voluntary relinquishment or surrender of some known right or privilege. And so the context of this, I was bringing it up, is that basically you can't bring up something on appeal for the first time. Generally, you have to raise it at the lower level because otherwise you're stopped from doing that.
Hey, did we discuss exactly what that was that this person brought up that they were estoppeled on?
Well, yeah, basically what they were saying is it was a due process argument.
Which means they were not properly prosecuted in the first place? They didn't have their day in court?
Well, basically what the petition said was whether or not the modern civil forfeiture statutes can be squared with the due process clause in our nation's history. So essentially, under the due process clause, are you entitled to more protections than what you are being granted with the civil forfeiture law?
Oh, okay. So that did get Clarence Thomas's attention.
Yes.
Because he evidently agreed with that, but he said you should have applied that in the lower court.
Exactly.
And by bringing it up now that you're here in the Supreme Court, it's the first time we hear this. You have some validity, but it's too late.
And essentially, contact your previous attorney and tell them to call their malpractice carrier because...
You should sue them. For $201,000 and a safe.
Yeah. I don't necessarily think it's malpractice if you bring up some sort of novel legal argument and you miss that. I mean, it's...
Do you know what they call that safe now that they've already taken the money that was in it?
Empty?
Unsafe.
I wonder how they opened it. I mean, did they have to give them the combination?
Well, they probably told them to open that safe. I mean, the guy's there with a gun and says, come back here to the truck. Open that safe.
Yeah, the guy with the gun.
I mean, you know, you're going to open the safe, so you do it. And there's a head inside.
What's in the box?
What's in the box?
What's in the box? I'm glad we both went to the street. Same thing there.
We had to bring that subject to a head.
Heads. The next term is in personam.
In personam, that means you have to be there in person.
The court is asserting power or jurisdiction over a person.
Oh, okay.
And then in rem.
That's over property.
Exactly.
And rem sleep and losing your religion.
That's right. One of the classic in rem actions is a foreclosure action. So basically, if like somebody owns a piece of property and they don't pay their mortgage, even if they aren't able to serve the person who owns it, they can proceed in rem just on the property itself because it's located there in the state. So it's basically in property or place thing. So
Not to be confused with adverse possession.
Right. Something different.
I just thought I'd bring it up since we talked about that last week.
Well, civil forfeiture, I mean, it's definitely one of those kind of controversial areas. Maybe not necessarily a bad thing in theory, but in practice, ripe for abuse.
Well, I think the reason that you can tell there's something up with this is the names. The names themselves tell you something's wrong. When you go through that list that we were supplied on those different cases, and you say, yeah, there's something wrong because we shouldn't read these and laugh.
Yeah.
You know, you don't read and laugh so-and-so versus a state for murder.
No.
You don't laugh about that. That is not a laughing matter. But when you read this other thing,
instead of United States versus 40 bales of marijuana. Oh, okay. I kind of get that. You know, I mean, yeah.
But when would you seize all the marijuana and not arrest the person?
Yeah. And why do you want a 1970 two-door sedan Rambler, a.k.a. a Gremlin? I mean, I know I would want
a Gremlin?
Yeah.
Nobody wants a Gremlin. I mean, unless you didn't feed it and it's past midnight or something like that. Don't feed them after midnight. Is that what it is? And don't get them wet.
Whatever you do, don't get them wet.
Don't get them wet. So don't talk to them.
That's getting cut. That's got to get cut. That's a little over the line. I like it.
One toke over the line, yeah. Sweet Jesus. Well, Michael, I can tell you this. I know a lot more about civil forfeitures now than I did before we started 41 minutes ago.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, it is.
And if you're looking at this and saying, well, this podcast isn't 41 minutes, so why did Tommy say 41 minutes?
That's where we are.
We had to cut out a few things because...
And we got to add the intro and the outro.
That's true. Maybe it'll even out.
There you go. We'll have to leave an Easter egg on those outros sometimes just to keep people listening, huh?
That's right. Never know what it's going to be.
But I always like these ones that we start out, and I think I'm on one side of the fence, and by the time we finish, I'm on the other.
Also, if you'd ask somebody or somebody ask you ahead of time, you'd be like, yeah, I'm for civil forfeiture.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should. Yeah, we should take it. But now after hearing the details of it, I'm not so sure anymore.
Yeah. It's like sausage when it gets made. Like, I like sausage.
I love sausage. I don't want to see it being made.
Yeah, I'm not certain how it's made.
I'm still going to eat it, though.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I am just a dude.